listeners to Sounding Out's podcast series, an oral chronicle of sound and culture. Sounding Out remixes the everyday with theory, insight, and practice. To learn more, please visit us on the web at www.soundstudiesblog.com. Until then, stay tuned for today's episode.
Yep, I'm listening. Testing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Hi, everybody. We're the team behind the Soundbox Project. I'm Mary Caitlin Lingold.
I'm Darren Miller.
And I'm Whitney Chatine. We're a group of graduate students at Duke University who are interested in experiencing sound in digital environments. We hosted an event back in September called Tweet a Sound, in which we asked people to tweet sounds for a day.
We weren't too specific in the call about what we were looking for, but we asked people to limit their audio clips to 12 seconds, which some people did and some didn't.
It was a lot of fun and pretty noisy. We wanted to share some of the interesting sounds people came up with and talk about the experiment.
Yep, I'm listening.
A lot of people asked us, why Twitter? Why not use some other platform to share sounds in social media? And it's not that Twitter is ideal for sharing audio content. On the contrary, it's a medium that is really predominated by text. At the same time, it's called Twitter, which is a sound that birds make. So Twitter is kind of principled on an idea of noise making, but when you experience it, it's very silent. Now, I wouldn't say that it's actually completely silent, because as anyone who uses it knows, a lot of people have really unique voices, and that's one of the things that makes it fun. Another thing that I enjoy about Twitter is that I can quickly scroll through it, and because of the 140-character brevity, encounter a lot of different ideas, topics, links, conversations. It has a kind of power browsing feel. Since we started the Soundbox project, we've thought a lot about how sound is experienced and archived on the web. One of the big differences between sound and text is that you can't really rifle through sound the way you can skim text. But rather than articulating this problem, we wanted to toss it to a public to see what would actually happen if we said, okay, here's this social media platform that is really unsuitable for sharing audio files, even though it's metaphorically invested in noisiness. Please, go ahead, try to make it noisy. And that's been another driving idea behind our collaboration, that experimentation and playfulness can transform digital writing. People are always coming up with exciting workarounds on the web, and we wanted to see how people would push our ideas about what might be possible in an audible Twitter.
When people decided to tweet a sound, there were two ways they decided to do it. The first was to use a third-party software that helped create a sound, so for instance, Audioboo or SoundCloud. Now, one of the nice things about both of these was that you could use your smartphone to create a sound right there from your phone on location. But you had to have a smartphone, which is obviously a limitation for some. Now, it was really good for some sounds, for example, recording on location. My backyard, construction on the street, bird sounds from your place of work or study. But it was very difficult for already existing sounds. For example, I really wanted to put 12 iconic seconds of Michael Jackson. But I didn't have the audio on my computer, and I didn't want to go find it and use it and edit it and things like that, so I had to work around. I played it through my speakers, recorded it on my phone, and then put it up on Twitter, which obviously resulted in a lower fidelity. So it worked, but it wasn't great, and it just took too much time. The second way that people put sounds onto Twitter was to put a link to an already existing sound. So for instance, YouTube or some other video or audio. Now this is the way that Twitter normally functions, so that wasn't necessarily different than already what was going on. And of course, this is easier to do since people already have a knowledge base of what they want, the sounds that they like, and there you have it. Of course, most of these clips were not necessarily 12 seconds or less, which was a nice reminder that people using Twitter already do share sounds every day.
Of course, some people got very creative with what they tweeted as sounds. For instance, somebody tweeted a score as a sound. Somebody tweeted an early 17th century ballad as a sound, which is an interesting reminder that sound exists in multiple media, not just audio.
There were a lot of different approaches people took throughout the day, and I myself decided to tweet on and off about things that came to mind or drew my attention, kind of trying to use Twitter and audio the way I would in writing on any given day. But immediately, that wasn't possible. For one thing, it would be really boring to actually speak out a hyperlink to an article. But others took a very different approach. For example, the Sounding Out blog team chronicled their day by posting periodic snippets of audio that they recorded at specific intervals. Here is Liana Silva typing away at 4 p.m. Central Time.
So as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that I was interested in is putting 12 seconds of iconic music of some artist. If I had to do that, what would I pick? What 12 seconds would make that artist immediately recognizable? So I went big. I decided to start with Michael Jackson. I put 12 seconds on SoundCloud, but didn't identify the artist or the sound. One of the nice things about SoundCloud is that it lets other people annotate your sound. Chris Lorch did so, 1 second in, correctly identifying the song as Thriller. Overall, my feeling is that moments of sound have a high potential for moments of social interaction. Since many of us had the same listening experience with the same artist, such as Michael Jackson, Twitter has the potential to enable such interaction to happen. But what ended up happening is that I realized that sounds, even small ones, contain so much information. And this drove home a point for me about this exercise. 12 seconds is actually way too much time. I think we only need one or two well-chosen seconds, which is pretty remarkable considering how many sounds are out there. But I also want to go back to this idea of sound and social interaction. Many of the sounds that were put up during the Tweet a Sound event, I had very specific memories related to those things. So for instance, one person had a flock of geese. Another had keys in the air. Somebody else had the sounds of finishing a book. These are all sounds that index a very particular experience for me. There was a lake I grew up near with huge flocks of geese, and during the spring and summer, the sound was everywhere. The keys reminded me of being a sophomore in high school when all my friends started to drive. When the moment came, most people carried around their keys out in the open, throwing them in the air or spinning them around their finger, just so everybody knew what their newfound freedom sounded like. Finishing that book is a common feeling of triumph, especially in graduate school. Maybe this just proves that sounds engender feelings of nostalgia, which is true. But what I found interesting about this is how each of these sounds index a particular experience for me, and that experience is based around specific locations, a lake, a school, a library. Yet these sounds themselves are void of any such specifics. They imply a location and were obviously made somewhere, but they allow me to fill in the gaps, so to speak.
At the same time that the sounds indexed shared experiences that we've all had, I also liked how it introduced a sonic dimension to activities that I had previously only known of conceptually or visually. For instance, I think a great example of this comes from the preservation and digitization labs at Duke Libraries, which tweeted sounds from their day, especially Beth Doyle. She was great at this. For instance, here's mold being vacuumed off an archival document. And here's the sound of a Colibri machine, which, by the way, is a machine that automatically covers a book. Or here's the sound of a board shear being used to conserve books. The time that I've spent in rare book rooms have not only been silent, but have been marked by the experience of trying desperately to be silent, stifling my sneezes, or muting my noisy keyboard, or making sure that pages of books don't rustle, since it's such a harsh sound that alerts potential damage being done to paper. Hearing the sounds of those books being preserved, though, especially hearing how noisy those activities are, introduces a new dimension to the experience of the archive. And the ghosts of these sounds have haunted my interaction with rare books ever since.
Jay Davis is a graduate student at UNC in communication and media studies, and her work focuses on performing in the digital. She wrote a blog post and shared some media and sounds with us on Tweet a Sound Day about her ideas about what she's doing when she performs her work in the digital. She described it as being like a whisper room. And in a whisper room, if you've ever been in one, you can stand on one side of the room and whisper something, and all the way on the other side, someone else can hear you. And she sees the work that she's doing in the digital as something like that, that she doesn't always know who her audience is, but she's nonetheless sending a message out there. And sometimes she'll get messages in return. One of the ways she does this is through her Tumblr, which focuses on vintage Black beauties. And there are images of Black women throughout the eras of photography. And this is the message that Jade is sending to the women in the photographs, but also to the women who are viewing them.
Isn't she beautiful?
Twitter, as a company and as a medium, has been experimenting recently with becoming a place where creatives can produce new content. So, for instance, Twitter recently sponsored a literary festival that was performed entirely inside Twitter. One novelist created a situation in which each character had its own Twitter account, and all the characters went to a party one night, and a girl was murdered, so it was a murder mystery. But it was performed live on Twitter as part of this literary festival. I think Twitter is interested in becoming more of a platform for creative production, and I'm interested how scholars begin to use it as a platform for creative production as well. In fact, since Tweet a Sound, a new app has been developed by Cloud Talk and is being promoted by Ricky Gervais. It's called Just Sayin'. It's an audio app for uploading sound to Facebook and Twitter. Twitter has also released an early version of Vine, a new tool for embedding 6 seconds of video and audio into a tweet. What's most exciting about these developments to me is less the corporate interests behind the tool and more the inventive, innovative, and sometimes surprising ways that people have been exploiting their expressive potentials. Exciting things lie ahead for sound on the web.
And then Robin James, a professor of philosophy at UNC Charlotte, who studies race, music, and gender, re-performed a 1975 video by feminist artist Martha Rosler called Semiotics of the Kitchen. At Dr. J, as she is known on Twitter, titled her piece, Sound Semiotics of the Kitchen. Here's a listen to a couple of examples.
Bowl.
Robin later completed the entire alphabet and wrote about the experiment on her blog, itsherfactory.blogspot.com. And now seems like a good time to mention that she used the platform Audioboo to record and post her work to Twitter. It's this one of the smartphone apps that Darren mentioned earlier. And although it makes it really easy to share simple recordings, it can be difficult to then use that audio content in later work. This is a problem that we also had in terms of what to do with the Tweet a Sounds after the event.
Other sounds tweeted out were similarly expansive to our horizons of experience. Darren, for instance, tweeted out a link to a tone matrix, which is a music composition tool. It's basically a simple looped grid in which each column is a scale, so you can create chords or simple melodies that repeat over and over again, and each time it loops through, you can create something new. Darren's tone was catchy. But I found myself wanting to play with it to build out harmonies. Eventually, I started acting like a small child and just created lots of noise by letting each beat hit a full scale of notes. This kind of activity is similar to what Mary Caton described earlier as meaningful play. That is, when sharing something, sharing a sound over a platform like Twitter, can not just become an experience to listen to something, but to participate in it. It becomes a site of interaction. In other words, Twitter was used not just as a platform for sharing information, for sharing news, text news, or audio news, but as a space for creative production.
So I have a question for everybody. What do you think was the biggest takeaway for you personally from Tweet a Sound?
Well, I think for me, one of the things going into was trying to figure out how I was going to create sound and put sounds out on Twitter. And we wanted to experiment with this idea of using this platform for putting audio out there. And what I came away with was still feeling that Twitter is an awkward place for sound, and that really it's not designed for it. But that says something about our experience online, and it really says something about our own goals as a project to figure out how to integrate sound into digital media, digital scholarship, and things like that, is that there's a lot of challenges, mostly because the internet as we use it is not sound-based.
And of course, this relates to the long-standing debates in media studies from McLuhan and others about cultural shifts between written and oral forms of communication, recording, and dissemination of information.
I agree, and I feel like it was a one-off experiment more than a sustainable thing. I was kind of hoping that we would come out thinking that, you know, more people would be inspired to use audio in their tweets on a regular basis, and I just don't think that was the case, in part because, as Darren said, it's an awkward medium, but also just because of how we use the web. We sit in very quiet libraries and have headphones on, and how we experience sound is not in an immersive way. It's always locked into our headphones or through very, you know, tinny computer speakers.
Yeah, I agree with those points. And I think for me, the biggest takeaway was just that I had a really fun time during the day. Despite the sort of formal constraints, it was so cool to actually hear people that I've met only online or that I don't know, to hear their voices or to hear sounds that they were making. Particularly one that I really remember was Beck Tink, who we've met in person in Durham. She works at the Museum of Life Sciences. She sent some recordings that she had made from a cabin on a lake in Canada where she was vacationing. And there was one that was the sound of lapping water, you know, by the lake, knocking against the rocks. And it was just so peaceful sounding and immediately transported me in my mind's eye to imagining being in this peaceful location where I knew that she was at the time. And another recording that she shared was of a morning fire in the cabin. And there was this crackles and hissing from the wood. And it just made me feel so cozy and made me experience another person through social media with a kind of richer affect or a stronger feeling of intimacy and a kind of reflectiveness that came over me just by virtue of having to be still and listen to this recording. Those 12 seconds ended up being, you know, as Darren pointed out earlier, a lot longer than I normally encounter things online. And that was really interesting and pleasurable.
Well, and I think that one of the things that comes to the front for me is that the internet can be and enables interactions through sound well, that it's possible for this to happen. It's just that we don't and doesn't, you know, the way that certain forms or formats like Twitter, they don't allow for it easily, but that doesn't mean that it still doesn't have the possibility. And I think that's something that's really important, is that there's flexibility in terms of how we or anybody out there can use sound in terms of this sort of online digital world.
Thank you to all the participants in Tweet-A-Sound, including those we didn't have time to feature here. Thank you also to the Franklin Humanities Institute and the PhD Lab in Digital Knowledge at Duke University for their ongoing generous support of our project.
Besides the contributions from the Soundbox team, this podcast has featured sounds from Leanna Silva at Literary Chica, Steph Sarasso at Steph Sarasso, Jonas Sig at J-S-I-I-G, Robin James at Dr. J, Duke Libraries Preservation and Digitization Labs at Duke Pres DPC, Jay Davis at JDid, Beck Tench at 10CH. Also a shout out to @SoundingOutBlog, as well as tonematrix.audiotool.com and @Duke Libraries.
I want to say thank you to the Sounding Out blog for being such amazing contributors to Tweet a Sound and helping us get it up and running and really investing in it whole hog, and also for hosting this podcast. We've been really inspired by the work they've done to bring sound into digital writing and create a community of people studying these issues, and we're really grateful for that.